Alex Donaldson, what is your favourite game?
My favourite game is Final Fantasy IX. God, my first memory of really, really being in love with a video game was going round to a friend's house, and they had a DOS computer, and I can't remember. It was a side-on shooting game, definitely very similar to the very early Duke Nukem games before they got ridiculous in 3D. And played that, you know, booted out of DOS, like I say. Fell in love with it, and that Christmas I asked for a computer. And I actually was really disappointed when Christmas came around, because instead of a actual PC, what I got instead was a Mega Drive. And I remember actually being very disappointed with the Mega Drive, because I wanted a computer, but that very quickly, within a matter of hours, faded. I had it with one of the Mega Games cartridges that had Streets of Rage on it. It had Super Hang-On on it. Immediately there, two classic and Golden Axe, three classic games that have some of the best music in all video games as well. It also had Columns and World Cup Italia 90, which had the amazing sound clip where when you score a goal, they just sort of scream in a really terrible digitized voice. Anyway, goal. So that was... It's so bad. I suggest you look it up on YouTube. It's awesome. And the funny thing is, the other week, me and the lads were drinking, and we actually got out the Mega Drive and played World Cup Italian 90. And it's still shit, and it's still got awful, the amazing sound effect when you kick the ball that sounds nothing like a football. Anyway, so that was my first video game machine. I did get a PC later on, you know. I remember my first PC had a 256 megabyte hard drive, which was massive at the time. And it's the PC I begged for and ended up getting specifically for Sonic CD, because I made the decision that a Sega CD would be less economical because there were less games. And then on the PC, I had things like GTA 1 and things like that. So. Yeah. It naturally went from there, and my path was very much a Sega console person. I had the Mega Drive, but then there were intermissions. So I was Mega Drive, and then I was N64, and then I was Dreamcast, and then, you know, by that point I was kind of coming up to teenage years where I could start to buy things, you know, of my own will and have more stuff. In amongst all that, probably the game series that's changed my life more than anything else, it's probably one that somebody else who I know who's appearing on this series is very into, which is Sonic the Hedgehog. I think Sonic 2 was my first one, but I honestly can't remember. If we're talking favourite games, if I have to name my top three games of all time, Final Fantasy IX is certainly one of them, and I would definitely 110% say Sonic the Hedgehog 3 and Knuckles as one locked-on cartridge, as one game as originally intended, or almost as originally intended, because they shifted the level order and stuff a bit to split the games, is the most perfect 2D platformer ever made. The closest thing to it is probably Super Mario World after that, maybe Mario 3, depending on your perspective. Because I love those games so much, I got into the Sonic the Hedgehog online community. People who know me will see my internet handle, which has the word Zone Runner in it. And a Zone Runner was in the Sonic the Hedgehog comic that ran from about 91 through to about 2002, 2003 or something like that. A Zone Runner was from a story arc in the story of those comics for the first 100 issues or so. It was a dictatorship on the planet with Robotnik in power. And in addition to Sonic and the named characters, the big characters like Tails and Knuckles and people as freedom fighters, the Zone Runners were basically freedom fighters, who minor characters who went around blowing up Robotnik installations and stuff like that. And I've used that name since I was probably about 8 years old in some manner or another on the internet. So that comes from the Sonic the Hedgehog community. And I kind of grew up in that community. And I think it was how do you say this without insulting somebody? I think in those days, the community was a lot more innocent and it was a lot less driven. You were a lot less likely to bump into some horrific furry pornography than you are now. And I absolutely grew up in that community. And at the time, I actually wanted to make games. And I was there was a great website, probably still exists actually, called Sonic Fan Games HQ. And you would make your own Sonic games and build engines and all that kind of stuff in basic rudimentary programs. And I actually was a member of a couple of teams, did some art, did some physics stuff on a couple of Sonic fan games. And that was basically where I grew up online anyway. Fast forward a couple of years. And in addition to the N64, I didn't get a PlayStation right away. But when I got a PlayStation, Final Fantasy VIII was the new must-have game. And I don't know who wrote this, and maybe I've met them since, but I remember reading a Top Things in Games feature in official PlayStation magazine or something. And it was like a couple of weeks after Final Fantasy VIII had come out, and they had said that the game had made them cry. And at this point in my life, I was realizing that I absolutely... Can I swear, by the way?
You can swear all you want, you're fucking nuts.
Well, I was realizing that I am absolutely shockingly shit at maths. And and I was realizing that I wasn't going to be able to program and make games. And I'm not a very good artist either. But what I was getting the best grades in, what I got the most enjoyment out of was reading and writing. So that kind of linked in with all the things I was reading in the magazines, all the hype about Final Fantasy VIII being a game that's like a movie with amazing story and amazing writing. A friend of mine, Rob Rymond, who used to work in games and doesn't anymore, his Twitter handle is @RobRymond, he actually brought round to my house a copy of Final Fantasy VIII that he'd rented from Blockbuster, which is not a good game to rent because it's a 40-hour game. But yeah, it was me, him, and my friend Dan, and we sat up what felt at the time like all night. And in reality, it was probably till about 1 a.m. But at that age, it felt like, you know, we were breaking the biggest taboo, basically a sleepover. And we, you know, this was, I remember we just sat there, and I have never played a game in such an intense manner. Up till that point, I had never done it. And we probably played, I would say, 6, 7, maybe 8 hours solid. You know, I was 10 years old, got to the end of disc one, more or less, and was absolutely enamored and in love, and went out the next day to the local Comet. And it's weird that I remember specifics that it was Comet. And I bought Final Fantasy VII and Final Fantasy VIII. And I'm pretty sure at that point, VII was platinum, so it was cheaper. That was why I got both. Yeah. I can't quite remember. So anyway, went and played those. And yeah, I was instantly a fan. And the funny thing is now, 7 and 8 are probably two of my lesser-liked entries in the series. 8 certainly has a vast number of problems. 7 is a wonderful game, but it's like the... It's that watershed moment where the series changes forever, I suppose, and so people remember it more fondly than perhaps it actually deserves. But anyway, you know, I digress. At that point, you know, I was starting to get to the point where the Sonic community was beginning to bore me, and the natural thing was to go and to look into the community for the game that I'd just fallen in love with. So went online, found several Final Fantasy sites. You know, I can't remember many of them. There's one of them where the design is etched into my memory, but I can't actually remember the name of it, which really bums me out. A lot of them aren't around anymore. Made some friends, and eventually, you know, I end up in charge, like one of the people in charge of a Final Fantasy website that at the time was UFF9, which is the unofficial Final Fantasy 9 site. The interesting thing about UFF9 is it was actually founded well before the American release. Obviously, there was always a big gap between releases back then. And in the case of Final Fantasy IX, I think it was about a year. I can't remember off the top of my head. But anyway, June 2000, June the 28th, 2000, actually, was the date that UFF9 was set up. And basically, that site was all-consuming. The game came out in July 7th, 2000 in Japan. So the website predates the game by a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And then it hit. I've just looked it up. It hit the West. 6 months later.
Yeah, November 2000, North America, and February the following year in Europe.
So UFF9 was everything to me. There's some, it was a wonderful community, and I was at school and having tons of fun with all my school friends. But there was a whole other world when I came home and when I wasn't with my school friends, which was this website. Made some wonderful friends who I still speak to, shout outs to some of them, to Mike, to Kathleen, to Sophie. Basically, that website absolutely 100% changed my life and is a big reason why I picked Final Fantasy IX, aside from the game itself, as my favorite game of all time. Because even though the top three, the other one apart from Sonic, is Star Fox 64, or Lilac Wars to Europeans, by the way. The reason why Final Fantasy IX comes out on the top of those three, because they are all pretty much equal in my mind, is because of everything else that website, that game and the website attached to it means to me. Later on, UFF9, UFF10 was set up separately. Later on, further down the line, I hatched the grand plan to merge UFF9 and UFF10 into one site, which then became UFF site. And that website still exists. It's 14 and a half years later. It still exists. It hasn't been updated regularly in terms of news and things like that in many years, because I'm frankly too busy. But the wonderful thing about it is the website's still going very, very strong and has a huge audience of people, because it has some absolutely wonderful, if deeply in need of sub-editing, because of the age, how old they are. Web pages about things like, walkthroughs and FAQs, and if you want weapon lists and all that kind of stuff, that's ufsside.net. And that website actually gave me the springboard I needed to get into writing about games and working in community and marketing and all the kind of stuff that all the various hats I wear in my real life now. So yeah, I mean, that is the overarching story, I suppose, of how I got into games and how I got to where I am today. A lot of stuff happened. We set up different websites. We now own double digit numbers of websites across the board, and I'm very, very proud of what we've accomplished. And currently, for the 15th birthday of the Final Fantasy site, we are actually putting a lot of effort and a lot of time into a new version of that site that we hope will offer something very different to what any fan site has before. And the great thing is, because we are approaching it from a more business sensibility than a more fan sensibility, because to be honest with you, I'm not a very huge fan of modern Final Fantasy at all. It allows us to approach it in a cool and different way and really think about what can really excite people.
Final Fantasy IX. So, like you talked about, the getting introduced to the series with 8, and then you went out and picked up 7. So we don't need to get into how you got into the series. So, let's just skip forward then to the elements that you liked about it. Like this was kind of the first Final Fantasy game in a while to not have a kind of futuristic setting, because 7 and 8 had those, whereas 9 was kind of more. Not futuristic, anyways.
Well, Seven has what I would call a steampunk aesthetic to it most of the time, and 8 is actually an interesting blend of sci-fi and real world. Dealing City in 8 is essentially a real city that you could probably find a relative or dollar as well. You could find a decent analogy for on Earth. But you struggle to find something that looked quite like Balham Garden. So it's an interesting game. But 9, yeah, is I mean, let me start at the top. In order to explain why I love the game, I think it's important for me to talk about where the game came from. Final Fantasy IX actually began life as a title called Final Fantasy Gaiden. The intention was actually for a spin-off, not a mainline entry of the Final Fantasy series. And the person that was, you have to think also about Square soft at the time. So what was going on at that moment was they would always, during Final Fantasy VII, towards the end, a small splinter group of people left the project, began working on 8, and then the 7 team moved on to 8 when they were completely finished. What happened with 9 was a bit interesting and a bit different, because the creator of the series, Hironobu Sakaguchi, was currently in the process of moving to Hawaii, which was where Square Pictures was set up, which is where they were making the ill-fated Final Fantasy movie that came out around the same time as Final Fantasy IX.
Yeah, the Spirits of Fate.
Yeah, and there was a side team, which was the team led by Hiroyuki Ito. And I just want to sidetrack for a second and say, Hiroyuki Ito, the director of Final Fantasy IX, is probably the most talented person Square has ever employed, and is probably, in terms of systems and mechanics, the most important designer in the history of Japanese RPGs. To give you some perspective, this man designed the active time battle system. You know, he designed all the battle systems for Final Fantasy XII as well. He designed much of the job system in Final Fantasy V, which was obviously a huge impact later on. This is the guy who actually came up with the original concept for Materia in Final Fantasy VII. Even though he didn't do much actual work on that game, the original concept was an idea that was birthed with him. And likewise in 8, with the junction system, although he didn't work directly on that, the core idea actually came from him. I think also Triple Triad, the card game, he was the one who initially kind of came up with the broad overarching idea. So this guy is an absolute bloody genius. And he had actually previously been working on Final Fantasy Tactics, and Final Fantasy Tactics was done. And Sakaguchi said to him, I want you to go off and work on this Final Fantasy Gaiden, because he was a designer who was very gameplay focused, but also, you know, he had a long history with Final Fantasy. He was a debugger on Final Fantasy 1 and 2. He worked on sound effects in 3. And then by the time he hit 4, he had risen to working on the battle system and all that kind of stuff. You know, the patent for the active time battle system, which is still used to this day in many RPGs, is in his name on behalf of Square. So he took Ito and said, I want you to make Final Fantasy Gaiden, and I want you to do it with a team that's actually, you know, partially based in Japan, in Tokyo, with the Squaresoft offices, but also partially based in Hawaii. And that is a really important point about Final Fantasy IX in general. So the interesting thing is, because it was made in, because a lot of it was made in Hawaii, the game has a very different feel to every other entry in the series. You know, the team that made Final Fantasy IX has never got back together again, where to a core point, you can kind of say the team that made, there's a through line of the team that made 7, 8, 10, and 13. There is a clear through line there if you look at staff. But yeah. 9 had a lot of Westerners working on it. And you can see, you know, in art, doing the CG backgrounds, all that kind of stuff. And that has a huge impact on the style of this game. And it's a very Western and European, specifically, influenced game. You know, when Nobuo Uematsu was preparing himself to write the soundtrack, Square actually flew him out to Europe, and he went on, I think, like a 10-week trip across Europe, looking at castles in England and the countryside in France and all that kind of stuff, to really pick up the feel that this game was going to have. And when you look at the locations in the game, when you look at places like Alexandria, like Lindblom, like Bermesia, there is a very European style to them, with the obvious filter of being filtered through Japan and filtered through you know, some of the talented artists on the game, like Hideo Minaba. So it's really, really, really fascinating, interesting. I absolutely adore that about this game. You know, at a point in time, it obviously became Final Fantasy IX, and it was announced. It's hard to believe this. It was announced at the same time as
10 and 11.
As 10 and 11, yeah. And yeah, I mean, it's really, it's a different game. There is no, despite the fact that it exists to be a love letter to the past Final Fantasy games, it is really a game that the feel of which hasn't been replicated within the Final Fantasy series. And I think a large part of that is down to the team that worked on it, the attitude behind it all, and the fact that you know, there was a disproportionate number of Westerners working on it. So, yeah, I mean, it's really, really difficult for me to articulate exactly why I love this game. I mean, you know, I've spoken a lot about art and aesthetics, and obviously a large part of a game is gameplay. In that respect, Final Fantasy IX is really the archetypal Final Fantasy game. It has a very conservative battle system that is essentially designed to have elements of the additions that came later, especially in 6, 7, and 8. So you have the trance system, which is really a natural evolution of blitz and limit breaks and all that kind of stuff. But then you have where in Final Fantasy 7 and 8, characters had basic things they were good at and they were bad at, like, you know, Aerith is better at magic than Cloud, but if you want Cloud to play like a mage, you can break the mold and make him play that way with various materia and stat boosts and all that kind of stuff. Final Fantasy IX goes back to the basics of having four party members in battle, which hadn't been the case since 6, and it goes back to the idea of having very, very set roles for each of the characters in the game. You know, and this actually gets used in the game as well. You know, there's a section of the game where you have to split the party in two. And, you know, the place you're going to with one party has a magic suppression field on. So you want to pick the party members who don't use magic. That was, at the time, really interesting to me. And you have to remember that, at the time, I hadn't played Final Fantasy VI or IV or any of those games. So it was actually very new to me. And it was, I thought it was brilliant then, and then it merely endeared it to me when I learned that it was actually a love letter to the past entries, and when I actually went back and played those games as they released in Europe. So there's that. I mean, you know, there's probably going to be people who prefer other Final Fantasy games listening to this and screaming out and saying, yeah, but the battle system is slow. And it is. You know, there's an interesting story here, and I'm absolutely, you know, I apologize. I've got way too much trivia about the development of this game. When the game was first conceived, Hiroyuki Ito actually wanted it to be the fastest iteration in the Final Fantasy series in terms of the battle system. However, it was so fast on the early builds that it was absolutely destroying the frame rate. And another interesting thing about Final Fantasy IX is it actually, when it began life, before it was announced, they weren't really sure if it was going to be a PlayStation 1 or a PlayStation 2 game. They very quickly decided on PS1, and that kind of sealed the fate of how the battle system should be, because although Ito, I think, was willing to make the sacrifice, it was Sakaguchi who appears to have looked at it and said, it's great, but the frame rate is unacceptable, so what we'll do is we'll go in the complete opposite direction, and we'll have this be the slowest iteration. The reason behind that, in Sakaguchi's mind, the justification being the idea that by being the slowest, it's still active time battle system, which Final Fantasy used from 4 onwards, but it's so slow that it feels a little bit like the traditional turn-based from 1, 2, and 3. Which makes sense, and, you know, if, don't get me wrong, if I could play a version of this game which moved a lot quicker, I would jump at the chance, but I can't. You know, it's a flaw that I recognize, but it does not dent my love and adoration of the game. So, yeah, I mean, really, you know, simplistic but really satisfying character progression and equipment and all that kind of stuff. But as with any Final Fantasy game, really the defining characteristic is the story. And I think what you have here is there's a few Final Fantasy games that do really well with ensemble casts. Like, to be honest with you, as much as people love 7, and I believe somebody else is talking about 7, right?
Yeah.
And I'm sure they'll talk about how amazing the story is and the twist of the death and all that kind of stuff. What I'll say is this. There are core characters in Final Fantasy 7 who are wonderful, very, very good characters. However, and it is a however, and it's a big one, there are also characters in that game who feel relatively periphery and irrelevant to the story. And the same is true of 8, even though they are all kind of connected in a very specific and cheesy way. But in 9 and in 6, and to a lesser extent in 13, these are ensemble casts where the story is not, you know, the story of Final Fantasy 7 is about Cloud and Sephiroth and Aerith, and then there are bit players who to do things to move that plot around. But that's what the core plot is. The plot of Final Fantasy VIII is a love story between Squall and Rinoa, and then ultimately, you know, he's trying to save her. He's saving Compression of Time, but he's also saving her from the fate of being a sorceress in that game because he loves her. Final Fantasy IX isn't really specifically a game about Zidane. It isn't really a game about Garnet. It isn't really a game about any of the cast. If anything, at the very least, you could say the game is, if it's about anybody, it's about Vivi, the little black mage character. The core theme of the game, which is really about the meaning of life and death and what it means to make the most of whatever time you have, is really exemplified best in him. But it's a game more about a world. I mean, this is a game where, you know, across the first couple of discs, you are on the run with the princess while her mother, under terrible influence and fueled by the grief of the death of her husband, the king, you know, commits genocide upon one of the major races and nations on the continent, invades and occupies the other. Well, the other two, actually. And it's a game about that. It's a game about this. It's a game about the world, I think, as much as anything. Like, I couldn't, you know, there are so many scenes that I could name to you as favourite scenes, but I couldn't. It's a wonderful, wonderful story. And, you know, I think there's brilliant character archetypes, you know. The journey that a character like Steiner takes, where he begins as, to be honest, a pain in the ass, and is a character that you don't like very much, and then he becomes comic relief, and then he becomes utterly, you know, brilliant. It's a wonderful character journey. As somebody, you know, who you know, studied English literature, it feels like, you know, I could have written my dissertation on the way the plot is executed in Final Fantasy IX. And there's things that a lot of games don't think about. There's little touches. You know, I was talking about Steiner, and when I think about that character, I think about one specific moment on the third... Is it the third or the second? I think it's the third disc of the game. Yeah, it's the third disc. Where, you know, his country, Alexandria, is under attack, and he and Beatrix, who is also, it has to be said, probably one of the finest female characters in the history of a series, with an exemplary number of great female characters. They're defending the city, and there's endless monsters, and it's one of those Final Fantasy things. You can't really lose in that section. It's a story section. Monsters are coming, but the battles aren't very hard. It's actually about those little snippets of text that appear between the battles or on top of the screen while you're battling, because it's those two talking, and those two are in the process at that time also of falling in love. But the thing that stands out to me about Steiner as a character is, you know, he spends the whole game protecting the princess, and in protecting the princess, he ends up being an ass to Zidane, who is really the cipher for the player, and to the rest of the party, and actually, in some cases, does more harm than good. But at this point, she's queen. She's been crowned queen. And it's just this little moment where they're standing back to back, and there's monsters on either side of them, and you're about to enter the battle. And Beatrix shouts, save the queen, or something to that effect. And Steiner shouts, for the princess, still. Because that's the way he still thinks of her, even though she's queen. And it's such a tiny character note, but it absolutely sticks and resonates in my mind as a wonderful piece of character writing that isn't very common in games now and was practically unheard of then. And don't get me wrong, the other Final Fantasy games have moments like those too, which is why they're so well regarded. That PlayStation 1 era, late Super Nintendo era, they have moments like that too. But I think of that moment and I think there aren't many games that that can do things like that. It's a story that just thinking about the way aspects of that story play out makes me smile immensely.
I have to ask, is there anything you don't like about this game? Because you've rambled on for pretty much 15 minutes non-stop without interruption and without a single bad thing against it.
It's a good question. And, you know, I mean, as I said, the battle system is problematic and it actually makes the game a little bit difficult to replay now, especially in European regions, because even the PlayStation Network versions, the PS1 versions of the Final Fantasy games run at 50 hertz. So that's slower. I don't know how much slower it is, but it is a significant percentage slower. And when you put that on top of an already slow game, it's even more unbearable. So the PAL version of Final Fantasy IX in particular is quite difficult to play. And, you know, a lot of people also just don't like how simplistic the battle system is. And I acknowledge that. And, you know, Final Fantasy IX is by no means a perfect game. There are a lot of problems with it.
I genuinely believe, there is no perfect game ever. Like, there's no form of entertainment that's perfect ever, to be honest, in my opinion.
I would agree with that. But there are games that I look at on my shelf, and I think to myself, objectively, in balance, that is probably a better game than Final Fantasy IX. I'm looking at the shelf now, and specifically, I'm looking at Mass Effect 2. But I can think of many others as well. But to be honest with you, in fact, there are probably entries in the Final Fantasy series that are, on balance, overall, probably better than Final Fantasy IX. But Final Fantasy IX, to me, is an utterly magical game, and it is is the reason it is my favorite. I mean, I think there is absolutely nothing objective about that. You know, there are other criticisms I can make. I talked about the ensemble cast. You know, one of the cast in particular, Amaranth, is just really a bit of a non-character, and that's unfortunate. You know, they. Most of the cast is brilliant, but at the same time, I personally can overlook him, even though he's a playable character who is a bit empty and a bit pants in the scheme of things, because some of the subcast, people like Beatrix or Blank, who are minor bit players in the story, really are so good they sort of make up for one of the player characters not being that great, to me anyway. And, you know, the other thing I haven't mentioned, I'm just going to tick off things in my head. I mentioned story, I mentioned gameplay, I mentioned the aesthetic of the game being more European style, and also the soundtrack. I don't think it's Nobuo Uematsu's best work, but it's definitely in the top three.
You've talked to NRS in part about, you know, Hiroyuki Ito and his work on Final Fantasy IX, but obviously he's done a lot more than just, you know, Final Fantasy IX, because, like, going way back, you know, you mentioned he's made, you know, some of these gameplay battle systems for, you know, past installments, and he was also involved with Final Fantasy XII when Matsuno left. Or he was involved with XII when Matsuno was still about.
He was co-director for the entire thing, but when Matsuno stepped away, Ito became the sole director of the game.
And, like, when I think of, you know, game developers who mean a lot to so many people, when I think of, for me anyways, like, it's Kojima.
I knew you were going to say him.
Would I be right in saying the same thing about you and Ito?
Yeah, I mean, I think he has been, lately especially, getting blown a bit out of proportion, because he's been silent since Final Fantasy XII. There was one game, Guardian Cross, where he was credited with the overall idea. And in 2012, there was some interview or something surfaced with him where he said he would work on another Final Fantasy game if the company's president asked him to. And there's been other little tidbits we've heard about him. Tetsuya Nomura said he regards Ito as one of only four people that he is that is superior to him within the development area of Square.
And, his senior, basically.
Yeah, his senior. And when I spoke to, last year, I spoke to the head of the Final Fantasy brand, Shinji Hashimoto, and I asked him specifically what Ito was up to. And he was very coy, and he kind of laughed, and he said, you know, you're very interesting asking specifically about that one guy. And I said, why? I said, because I honestly think he's the best guy you've got. I think, you know, Kojima is a good comparison. I think Ito... It's weird because Final Fantasy IX is the opposite, where the battle system is probably the weakest part of the game. But on the whole, Ito is probably the best systems person in the world of Japanese RPGs. And I genuinely believe that. And, you know, the comparison to Kojima or Sakurai for Smash Brothers or whoever is, I think, very, very apt. But flip side, as I was saying, in recent years, because people have been unhappy with Final Fantasy and because Ito has been very, very quiet, his name has started to come up more and more because, one, people want to know what he's doing, and two, people feel like him coming back in could fix everything. And if we're talking about the future of the Final Fantasy series, I don't think that's necessarily true. He's a wonderful developer. He's incredibly smart. But I think all of his greatest successes have been him as a systems designer, as a gameplay-focused person. Or a technology-focused person, working with somebody else that is very, very, very talented. You know, on Final Fantasy XII, he was working, and Tactics, he was working with Matsuno. And Final Fantasy IX was really the last Final Fantasy title that Sakaguchi had direct heavy involvement in, and he was actually Sakaguchi is credited as the writer on that game, which he wasn't on 7 or 8. He was credited with ideas, but yeah. So Ito's somebody who I think is a visionary, and I think is absolutely incredible. But he's somebody that I think performs best when he's paired with the right people, and I hope that if he is working on Final Fantasy 16, as I believe he is, I hope he's working with some talented people who help to balance out the bits that he doesn't always get right.
Yeah, I was just seeing a tweet from you the other day about how he really needs someone who beside him who's more in check with the story side of things.
Yeah, and because you know, I think that's borne out in 12. Where if you look at Final Fantasy 12, I think you can see and you can feel in that game the stuff that was done story wise after Matsuno was gone. Matsuno continued to supervise, whatever that means. But who knows how much that actually meant, because it seems like he left that game in not the best of circumstances.
Yeah.
It seemed like he wasn't happy with... There were certain things Square expected of a mainline Final Fantasy game, such as having a young, pretty male lead character that Matsuno didn't want. And when those things were being essentially forced upon the game, it seems like he maybe had a bit of a strop. But the point is, the stuff after Matsuno left, the story does kind of, it doesn't get worse, but the execution isn't there, I think, on aspects of the story in 12 in that respect. So I do think he needs to be, because he was also the co-director of Final Fantasy VI. And the interesting thing is, on that game, he was the co-director alongside a guy who hasn't disappeared off the face of the earth, which is Yoshinori Kitase, who is the guy who obviously produced and directed Final Fantasy X and produced Final Fantasy XIII. And he is a guy who actually, before he got into games, wanted to make movies.
Yeah.
So those two balance each other out very well in that respect. Because Ito is the kind of guy who, you know, who when he does other things, he's constantly thinking about game systems. You know, famously the active time battle system, which is, you know, where the ready bars increase at differing rates for each character in the party and the enemy, was actually directly inspired by, he was sitting there watching F1 and he was thinking about how the cars go past each other and all that kind of stuff. So that's the kind of designer he is. That is something that I don't think Kitase-san or even like Sakaguchi would think of.
Let's talk in specifics about the future of the series, more specifically Type-0 HD and, well, 15, or well, more or less 15. Be exact, because Type Zero, we already know what we're getting into, at least if you've played the Japanese version.
Yeah.
But 15, bloody hell. That's been a very long road.
Chinese democracy of video games, right? You know, with Tetsuya Nomura as your Axl Rose, right?
we all kind of said that about Duke Nukem Forever as well, to be fair.
Yeah, I mean, which one's longer now? That's an interesting question.
Duke's longer now, because Final Fantasy 15 /Versus, that's... But Duke, oh, no, you're talking
Duke
development.
But Duke came out, yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I mean, yeah. But either way, you know, that game has clearly had a very deeply troubled development. If you ask me for my read on it, I don't think Nomura left that project of his own free will. I think one of two things happened. I think either he was kind of dressed down and said, you have fucked this, you've taken too long, we're removing you, go to Kingdom Hearts, you know, with your head held high rather than being humiliated, and do a better job there. Mm. Or the same thing has happened with what that happened with 12, where, you know, it's very clear now that the game that is coming, thanks to the recent interviews, is a very different game to what was envisioned and what was shown of Versus over the years. And the other option is potentially that maybe he wasn't very happy with the direction the game was taking, and thus he decided to step away from the project because he felt like it wasn't what he had intended anymore. What do I think about that game? You know, I was never very excited for it when it was Versus, for two reasons. One, I'm not a huge fan of, like, mega realistic looking Final Fantasies. I mean, I've spent ages gushing about 9's over the top, but deeply European aesthetic and the return to the magical roots of you know, the early Final Fantasy titles. I love that stuff. And so when they started showing cars that are the spitting image of Audi R8s and things, I was a bit bummed out. And number two, some people aren't going to like this. Some people I'm friends with, you know, are going to say, you are. And some people at Square, if they listen to this, are going to say, aw. But I think Kingdom Hearts combat sucks ass. You know, it's Dynasty Warriors without any of the without any of the immediacy.
It's probably worth noting that he actually said this on Twitter an hour before we started recording this or something like that.
I was talking to somebody. Somebody said it, and I was like, "That combat sucks." Because somebody was complaining because of UFO. So I get a lot of people tweeting at me about what I think about Final Fantasy or whatever, and somebody was saying to me, "It sucks that they've removed the original combat." And I said, "I'm not that bothered about that because I think the Kingdom Hearts combat isn't very good. You know, it's X, 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 X triangle, and then sometimes you hold L1 and press square to make fire spell or whatever. And I don't think it's very... It always felt like a half-assed... You know, I've played games like... You want to talk about one-button combat, let's talk about Fable 2. That game has some great combat, even though it's really, 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 really ridiculously simple.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, in an age where, you know, The Witcher 3 is coming out, you know, let's be clear, right? Kingdom Hearts is a different beast. It's played by kids. It's played by casual gamers who just like Disney. That simple combat kind of works. And those games are fun enough. I've completed the two mainline ones and one of the spin-offs. And I've played pretty much every entry besides just to check them out. All well and good. Not complaining about Kingdom Hearts. I just don't think the combat's very good. But that's kind of a necessity to appeal to the audience it needs to appeal to. It's the same way I don't expect Disney Infinity or Skylanders. I don't expect Skylanders to be Diablo, even though they're roughly the same sort of gameplay loop. But let's be real. Final Fantasy, its rivals, when Final Fantasy 15 comes out, are going to be games like probably a new proper Fable, I hope, because I hope Heroes isn't the only one that's fucking coming. You know, a new proper Fable, probably a new Elder Scrolls or a new Fallout, things like The Witcher, you know, to a lesser extent, things like Dark Souls and things like Dragon Age. And those games all have much deeper combat than Kingdom Hearts, which, like I say, is only a step away from the mega simplicity of the Musou series. So those are the games that is rivaling, you know. And it's not that those combat systems are too complicated either, because, fuck, how many copies did Skyrim sell? Like 12, 15 million, something ridiculous? You know, people are not afraid of systems with more nuance. And I think that's an interesting thing at Square, and I would love to speak to some of the I hope that I get the chance to speak to Tabata soon about this. But, you know, the idea that oftentimes I feel like, for instance, I feel like the changes that have been made to 15's combat to make it less action-focused are kind of there to appease people, because there is still this idea that Final Fantasy can only be... To be full action would not be proper Final Fantasy. So the second they changed the name from Versus to 15, that had to change. And I don't know. I don't agree with that. I think you need to be more... you need to be more willing to embrace change and try different things than that. You know, it doesn't have to be that way. I understand that the vast majority of the Final Fantasy games are command-based, because that's what this difference is. It's the difference between a command system where you are looking at a menu and picking options out of a menu, and an action system where each button has a specific thing and you just remember what they do, you know, like your God of Wars of the world or whatever. Or The Witcher. You know, The Witcher doesn't have a menu that says attack, magic. It's just buttons. And same for Elder Scrolls. And Kingdom Hearts was always this weird middle ground where it seemed to me like they didn't know how to make an action game. So they made a traditional game and then turned off all the turn-based stuff and left the menu there, which is what Kingdom Hearts is like. And that series has carved its own niche. But I think with Final Fantasy, you can look at taking that broader. You can look at doing different things and going crazy with it. You know, it's that thing of, if the game plays out the way it appears to, and you have to press and hold a button to do attacks. So if you imagine Batman Arkham Asylum, but instead of having dodges be specifically timed or attacks be, you hammer on the X button or the square button to do them. You just hold it and Batman is going punch, 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 because you're holding the button. That's what it appears that they've done, because they think that the type of fan of Final Fantasy who likes command systems won't be willing to hammer on a button in real time. But I don't think that's true. I mean, that's better than the Kingdom Hearts option, because the problem with Kingdom Hearts is hammering on the button is all you're doing, and you need both. You need depth, and you need, if you're going to go full action, you need depth. It's, I don't know, it's early days. It's really, really difficult to say. Aesthetically, the game is very, very, very good looking, but the visual style doesn't appeal to me too much. But, you know, that was true of Final Fantasy VII as well, and that is still an entry that I love very much, and 8. So, you know, do I think this is going to break the... You know, there's this crazy thing where in one of the interviews, Tabata said he was hoping that it would be the best-selling Final Fantasy ever. And I think that is actually crazy talk. Like, that is actually head-tested area. Because, you know, Final Fantasy VII was a very, very specific game. It was the right game. I mean, it's often the case. It's the case for Metal Gear Solid as well. That is a brilliant game. Don't get me wrong. I'm not a huge fan of the series, but I absolutely understand why Metal Gear Solid 1 is so important. But that is also a game that just came out at the right time, doing the right things. And that's half of the battle, really. And yeah. Final Fantasy VII came out at this time when Sony was going for a big push on the PS1. It had the CG cutscenes, which was a perfect way, and I say this slightly facetiously, CD quality music, because obviously it's still MIDI, but yeah. You know, sounds better than an N64 sound chip. And it had all that stuff. And that was why, you know, Sony Computer Entertainment not only picked it up and localized it, but then put a $100 million advertising budget behind it in North America alone. That's just in North America, $100 million, and that's not inflation adjusted. And when you think about that, that is a fucking ton of money. I mean, how much was Destiny? But thing
500 million.
Yeah, and so you think about that. You think about how crazy the Destiny thing is there now, and then you also think about 15 years inflation.
Yeah.
On that, it's not going to be close to Destiny, but it's probably going to be like a third of Destiny's marketing budget, which is more than most AAA games get these days.
To be fair, I think Bungie have said that 500 million is for over the 10 years than just one game. But even still, I would say at least a good chunk of that money went towards, you know, marketing Destiny. Like, I would say over 100 million. I don't
know. Well, either way, the point stands, you know, 100 million was a lot of money. And that was really what made Final Fantasy VII the groundbreaking barnstormer that it was. Do I think that can be reached again? I don't know. You know, sometimes I think the companies that double down and embrace their tiny niche audience, like what Atlus is doing with Persona, are smarter. But also Square is, you know, they're at a point where they can't back out from that. They have to go. They can't not try. And I think they will, but I don't think 15, if that can even happen, I don't think 15 will be that game. I think when you've had a development that long, inevitably there's going to be weird things about that game. There's going to be things that drag it down. Because I feel like the vision has to be compromised somewhere. But we'll see, you know. I obviously cannot judge at this point. It would be unfair to do so, but that's just my inkling.
If I had to ask for your top three Final Fantasy games, what would they be? Because obviously 9 would be at the top, but where would you go from there?
Well, are you just talking mainline series?
Let's stick with mainline. Let's stick with mainline, just to be safe.
Well, I mean, it's probably 9, 6, 7, but I have a hell of a lot of love for 10, and I have a hell of a lot of love for 4. And as an honourable mention, it is also saying that, also worth saying that, although the game itself is shit, make no mistake, the world and aesthetic and style of Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles, The Crystal Bearers, which was the Wii exclusive game.
Yeah, that's right.
Is fucking awesome to me. And lo and behold, two of the top people on Final Fantasy IX did that game, so maybe that's just me. but the aesthetic and the characters and the way the world looks and the design of that game, Crystal Bearers is absolutely lovely. It's just a shame that the actual core game is a bit shit. And it'd probably be better with GameCube controls, but they didn't do that. It's all Wii. Mm. Wii remote, swinging your arms around like a dickhead. So, yeah. But it's probably 9, 6, and 7. But it could change also. My opinion is, it's like asking me, there aren't many things that Final Fantasy, that are like Final Fantasy to me, but it's like asking me who my favourite Doctor is, or or something like that. It does fluctuate a lot. Or who my favourite Mass Effect character is, or yeah, or whatever.
Let's move on to your honourable mentions then, shall we? I can probably guess at least two of them at this point, but go on, go nuts.
Crikey, in terms of best games ever, well, I already, you know, the most of them have crept into this as I've talked. You know, I mentioned in passing Mass Effect 2. That's definitely my favourite game of the last, one of my favourite games of the last decade. Talking Japanese RPGs, the best Japanese RPG of the last decade is Persona 4. I absolutely adore Sonic the Hedgehog 3 and Knuckles Locked On, as previously mentioned. Also mentioned Star Fox 64, aka Lilac Wars. For somebody who loved the idea of story in games, that is a 40-minute game that does more and endears its characters to you more than games that are 25 hours long. And I think that's really significant, especially considering the time period as well. I mean, it was 97, I think. What else? If we're talking about top 10 games, Ocarina of Time would certainly be in there. Although I know it hasn't aged very well, I absolutely love as one of my favourite games ever, Perfect Dark 1. I don't know, it's tough. I mean, I came in here with certain, as you've probably noted by how I've been able to talk at such ridiculous length, I came in here with certain things in my head mentally prepared. And a list of other games is admittedly not one of the things that I've got much, I've done much thought on. But, you know, I suppose I will say this. The interesting thing for me is, you know, I mentioned Persona earlier, but one of the things that's perhaps quite powerful to me about Final Fantasy is that I don't really generally like Japanese RPGs. If you sit me in front of Tales or, that's an interesting one because I do like those games. Those are another weird outlier. But if you sit me in front of games like Tales of or things like Hyperdimension Neptunia, or games that people love, like, you know, Trails in the Sky, they don't click for me as much. I'm much more of a Western RPG person. You know, I would rather have Fable 2 over Valkyria Chronicles, which some people would probably want to burn me at the stake for.
But I'm probably one of them, considering how much I love Valkyria Chronicles 1, at least. But I agree.
That's a great game, though, don't get me wrong.
No,
but
yeah.
But Final Fantasy is the one Japanese RPG that really, did, the older games anyway, really mean something different to me and speaks to me in the same way that Western games do. You know, there are very few games that have touched me the way that some of the Final Fantasy games have. And if we're looking at series, you know, Final Fantasy, it definitely has the most games that have been like that for me than any other game series, followed very closely by Zelda.
You kind of mentioned it at the top of the show, but just to recap, your top three games ever.
Yeah, like I say, it fluctuates a lot, but I feel like my top three is fairly static, which is Final Fantasy IX, and then Star Fox 64, aka Lilac Wars, and Sonic the Hedgehog 3 and Knuckles as one game. I'm on Twitter at APZoneRunner. That's Alpha, Papa, and then Zone Runner. You know, Zone as in Sonic the Hedgehog Zone, Runner as in Marathon Runner. You can, my main, a lot of my time spent managing RPG site, which is rpgsite.net. It does exactly what it says on the tin. It's a website dedicated to role-playing games of all types, and also games that role-playing fans will like. So we do stretch the definition. It's like, we know that most RPG fans like Zelda, so even though Zelda is an RPG, we do cover them. You know, we stretch the definition like that, but that's Western, Japanese, indie, AAA, everything across the board. We've got a wonderful set of writers. UFF site still exists, UFFsite.net. Like I say, we're planning to rebrand that website with a new name and relaunch it in a big way, hopefully early next year. So that's in the works. That can be found on over on NeoGAF, same name as Twitter. And then, you know, a couple of sites that I'm not so much directly involved with, but I do provide a lot of support for, Nova Crystallis, which is run by a great friend and colleague of mine, Erin. She, that's a great little site, and which is specific to Japanese RPGs and focuses on Final Fantasy Kingdom Hearts and stuff in particular. And Mognet Central, which is a big Japanese RPG community message board as well. I do a bit of the techie work over there. And yeah, I freelance, so you can find me over the place, you know, and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, I don't definitely check out RPG, so follow me on Twitter, bitch at me about my viewpoints and tell me that Final Fantasy IX sucks, and I will raise a middle finger at you, and that will be that.
Thanks for listening to My Favorite Game. Next week, Debbie Timmons on Grim Fandango. Until next week, bye-bye.